Welcome to Inside Ag from Kansas Farm Bureau, the voice of agriculture. I'm Shelby Varner. Keeping up with what the government is always doing may not be a top priority for people in Kansas, specifically those in agriculture. But today we're joined with Dennis McKinney, who is the Farm Service Agency State Director for Kansas. And he's here to fill in a few of those gaps for us. So Dennis, to get us started, can you share about what your involvement is in agriculture?
Our family farms and raises cattle in southern Kiowa and northern Comanche counties down in southwest Kansas. We're between Coldwater and Greensburg. Growing up, I went to Coldwater to school. My kids went to Greensburg to school. And then over the years, I was involved in the legislature and in a number of other activities, both local and state. Mid-February, I was appointed to be the state director for the Farm Service Agency in Kansas, which, of course, is part of the United States Department of Agriculture. I like that role. I like the mission of Farm Service Agency, which is to help provide food security. We get to partner with the world's best farmers and ranchers to create the safest, most abundant food supply in the world. That's good for consumers. It's good for producers. And let's face it, food security is the number one tool for our government in foreign policy and in national security. So making sure we have a strong agricultural sector is good for the entire country, both domestic policy and foreign policy.
You talked about having those relationships with the farmers. A lot of events have happened in Kansas over the past year. The four-county fire that happened in western Kansas and the drought we're obviously experiencing right now. What are some things that Kansas legislature has done to hopefully help Kansas and those tied to agriculture in these scenarios?
The state has done some things to help producers, you know, are victims of natural disasters. Governor Laura Kelly asked Kansas Secretary Mike Beam to head up a wildfire task force, which is looking at ways to mitigate the danger of wildfires. We've seen what happens in those wildfires. We know the risk is there. The risk is there in some of the rural areas where the rangeland's not maintained. Frankly, it's there around some of our cities where the cedars are not being cleared and the range is not being maintained to mitigate that risk. And so we need to work together, state and federal, to mitigate that wildfire risk, because when that happens, people call on federal agencies like the Farm Service Agency for assistance. So it'd be better right up front to reduce those fire hazards and exercise prevention, because we know an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And so that's where we're headed. The state's doing that. The federal government's doing it, you know, with CRP maintenance. And we're also, the FSA and the Natural Resources Conservation Service, we're working with producers to improve the quality of rangelands and mitigate that fire risk.
Moving on to another topic, also very important to agriculture, the Farm Bill. What is the Farm Bill and how does it affect your office?
The Farm Bill, of course, sets out the terms by which we operate in the Farm Service Agency, the programs that we have to help producers, the programs that we have to mitigate risk. Let's face it, in a capitalist economy, we do not want to remove all risk. The risk is a part of what makes capitalist markets work. We don't want to remove all of it. But in agriculture, we're subject to both price risk and weather risk. And we seek to mitigate that risk to keep a solid base of farmers and ranchers in place, producing a safe and abundant food supply. As I said, food security is critical for our nation's stability and security, national security and foreign policy. So that's what we try to do, is maintain, partner with farmers and ranchers to conserve our resources and produce a safe and abundant food supply. The best lesson we learned from that was after World War II, when our government used the abundance of our production to implement the Marshall Plan to help Western Europe rebuild after the World War II. And frankly, out of that, we built the NATO alliance and probably our strongest partners for national defense. And we were able to do that because our producers, our farmers and ranchers, are so good at producing food. And that's what we try to do, is keep them in place, mitigate the risk, produce a safe and abundant food supply.
Talking about all those farmers and ranchers, what are some main topics of interest in that Farm Bill for Kansas farmers and ranchers?
The Farm Bill, of course, has like the ARC PLC program, the ongoing program that crop producers sign up for, the CRP program, as well as other programs like EQIP that help with conservation. So we want to conserve our natural resources. That's the lesson we, of course, you know, I was raised by parents who came through the Depression and the Dust Bowl. They instilled those conservation values in us pretty deeply. Waste not, want not. Take care of the land will take care of you. So we have our conservation programs in there, as well as our programs to help us manage risk, whether it's the programs that help balance out price risk or help us recover from natural disasters. One of those we have going right now, of course, is the livestock forage program, because we have a lot of our state that's in the D3 and D4 drought levels. It helps producers cope when they've been in a drought so long that their grass is gone, their forage is gone. How do we maintain those herds? It's in the interest of consumers to keep those herds in place and not be totally liquidated. In the drought in 11, 12, 13, first half of 14, we had over 1 million cows liquidated just in Kansas, Texas, and Oklahoma, which resulted in very high beef prices, meat prices later on. Can we help producers keep those herds in place and help them not only sustain the drought, but also help consumers down the road? That's what we want to do. So we have the livestock forage program that helps producers recover from the loss of their forage and their pastures. We have the Emergency Livestock Assistance Program, ELAP, which helps a variety of producers, including honeybee producers. What's really probably of most note of that is to the cow-calf producers, the livestock producers in those areas hardest hit by drought. It will provide some assistance for trucking in hay from long distances. It will provide some assistance for those who've lost their water supplies. I mean, even in southeast Kansas, where you might normally have 40, 45 inches of rain a year, the ponds are dry. So they have to truck in, haul the water supplies. Can we help them manage that? That's kind of what ELAP is aimed to do. And then also we've tried to maximize the amount under the rules that we operate under, maximize the amount of CRP grass that's available for grazing and haying, and make that forage supply available to those producers so they can maintain those cow herds and those livestock herds, whether it's sheep, goats, whatever they're producing, keep those in place across the state. That's why we have reserve. That's why we call it the Conservation Reserve Program. We want that in reserve for years like this. So now we have years like this. This is when we should utilize it.
Jumping to talking about the Emergency Livestock Assistance Program, which you mentioned, how are producers able to utilize that program?
The Emergency Livestock Assistance Program, ELAP, it's important for producers to call their county office because you're supposed to get signed up for it within 30 days of when you notice the problem start. So if you started hauling water because your wells were going dry, your ponds were dry, we're hearing quite a bit of this across the state, get signed up within 30 days of when you start hauling the water. If you had to start trucking in feed, get signed up within 30 days of when you had to start trucking in feed. It's important because those are the deadlines. So I really want those producers to call their county FSA service center and get signed up as soon as possible for that assistance. There's restrictions on it. They'll calculate the total payment that gets reduced by about 45 to 47%, and then that's your payment. So basically, if you're hauling hay from a long distance, your reimbursement will probably be somewhere over $3 per loaded mile. And that's pretty significant help if you're bringing that hay in from quite a distance.
Definitely there to help support farmers. Here at Kansas Farm Bureau, we've had some members have questions about the ELAP program covering stockpiled forages, either standing native range or Sudan grass lost in a fire or other disaster. Is there assistance for those forages?
Right now, we're still working on a program to help producers who stockpile forage, whether like standing grass, grass they leave standing, or Sudan grass they leave standing for winter grazing. I mean, let's face it, that's not only smart economically, it's smart for your cow herd. It's also conservation smart and it's climate smart. So we want to get our program set up so those producers are rewarded, not penalized. Right now, under our disaster programs, like what we found out after the Fort County fire, we couldn't provide much help for those producers. And so we're trying to get that program changed so we can help them when those fires or other disasters occur. That really came to light after the Fort County fire. So we're trying to get that changed. I will say this. If you have hay in a pile, you've got your round bales, your square bales, whatever it is, you've got it stacked. Our programs don't cover that very well, but private insurance in the private sector is available and its cost is usually quite reasonable. I urge producers, if you don't have your hay pile insured, check with your insurance agent for private sector insurance on that hay that's in the stack. We don't cover it very well, probably shouldn't, because private sector insurance is available for that at a reasonable cost. So I really urge producers, get your haystack insured.
Definitely some important tips and suggestions for those who are concerned about things like that.
Right.
Going over to the Conservation Reserve Program, which you mentioned earlier, can you share a little bit more on what is CRP and what is its purpose?
Well, of course, CRP started back in about 1986. We were in the middle of the worst farm crisis in many, many years. It was started A, to get highly rotable land out of production, and B, to try to stabilize supplies. At that time, we had huge supplies on hand, and prices, even if you adjusted for inflation, were just historically low levels. I remind young people that I work with now that when I was getting started farming, there was a farm sale in easy driving distance at least three times a week, and the banks were being sold and going out of business. It's pretty tough times. So we started to reduce, to control supplies. CRP now helps us to do that, but mainly it's a conservation program. And we're expanding into different areas. We have a grassland CRP program, which will allow some grazing. We also have more grazing options now under general CRP. And I really want to make producers aware that we have more grazing options now. You can graze it. You kind of pick the times of year you want to graze. Your number of days grazing is limited. But we're trying to give more grazing options because some of the problems we used to have, the solution we would tell producers, okay, you're going to have to spray it and kill it and reseed it. And that's very expensive. And a lot of producers dropped out of the program, rightfully so, because they said, hey, this doesn't make any sense. We have too much western wheatgrass. Hey, if you have too much western wheatgrass in southwest Kansas, just graze it in February and March. You have too much brome in northeast Kansas, probably want to graze it in April and graze it. Maybe have a short-term intensive grazing program and then come out and let the other species of grass come on. Historically, that's the best way to manage the species that are causing us problems, is to adjust our grazing practices. It's much less expensive for the producer, makes much more sense in the whole ecosystem. And quite frankly, most communities, there's a young producer around. If you ask him if he'll graze it or she will graze it, the fence will be up before supper time and the livestock will be available.
Talking about grazing, the drought, how has that impacted what people are allowed to do within the program?
This year, we had emergency drought provisions to allow for grazing and haying. We also have non-emergency provisions, which allow people to do grazing and haying at different times. There's a difference in the percentage of the CRP that can be hayed or how many days the CRP can be grazed. And so we urge producers to take a look at either option, either emergency or non-emergency. Non-emergency usually gives a producer more flexibility, but it requires giving up a fourth of that year's CRP payment. So we've urged producers to take a look at both. Now, the application deadline for non-emergency haying has gone by, but we urge producers to take a look at those grazing restrictions to see what works best for them. Again, we know that grazing actually improves the CRP stand, so that's why we're encouraging more of it now. And our conservation partners, you know, like Wildlife and Parks and Nature Conservancy, other conservation partners are really supporting these options because it not only improves the CRP, helps us control problem species, but actually improves wildlife habitat. Only when we hay the ground, only depending on what program you're under, only 50 to 75% of it can be hayed. So it doesn't all get hayed at one time. So there's still habitat available. We have grazing management plans that are required during the primary nesting season. So provisions are in place to protect wildlife habitat. And we still want to achieve those conservation goals. We believe we can achieve those conservation goals. And we will still help producers work through this drought.
We've talked about a lot of different programs and things that are happening in FSA to help support farmers and agricultural producers. Are there other things that are also happening that we haven't yet mentioned today?
One more thing I'll mention, our NAP insurance, which is insurance for the crops you normally can insure under federal crop insurance. For example, like orchards, produce, grass, forage, sorghum. A lot of crops out there normally are hard to insure under federal crop insurance, your regular all-risk crop insurance. We have NAP insurance available. And for some of our producers who've historically been underserved, for women who are running the ranch or the farm, that NAP insurance right now is free. So there's no reason not to have it. Please sign up for it. It can help you manage your risk. And we're also increasing our outreach in urban areas and for urban ag because we have growing businesses around our urban areas where our farmers are producing more produce, more vegetables and fruit and other specialty crops to be sold directly into urban markets. We want to encourage that. It's been a priority of Secretary Vilsack and this administration to reach out there and help develop that because it helps us develop a more resilient and sustainable food supply. And I would also add the Department of Agriculture, not FSA, but Department of Agriculture has been doing its dead level best to help our small-scale meat processors expand, because it's very important to those producers out there who are trying to create niche markets for their beef or their lamb, whatever it is they're producing. And that's an important issue too, because that We have a lot of innovative producers out there across Kansas. If they can use those local small-scale meat processors, it creates more competition in the meat processing industry, for one thing, which we need, but it also helps those producers use their ingenuity, their entrepreneurial skills, to get into those niche markets and meet producers where they need to meet them and create those markets.
A lot of things that you've mentioned in this interview are there to help the farmers, and you've encourage them to look into it. If those producers are wanting to look into it, where should they go? What should they do to be able to find that information?
Contact their local county service center for the Farm Service Agency, and they will have the details. They're welcome to call me at the state office in Manhattan, and I'll try to get them to the right place if for some reason they can't get it. The primary place, we have tools available online as well, but I urge people to, you know, if you don't know them, get to know the folks at the Farm Service Center. I am very proud. Farm Service Agency employees that I know, that I've met as I've crisscrossed across the state, have a real heart for public service, and they want to help you. So get to know them, and they'll help you learn the program and get signed up for what you need to be signed up for.
Is there anything else that you would like Kansans and agricultural producers to know?
Just that we get the opportunity, in Farm Service Agency, we get the opportunity to partner with the world's best farmers and ranchers to help achieve food security, to create the safest, most abundant food supply in the world. We are really proud of that mission. And I don't believe that our missions, that our objectives are exclusive. We strongly believe we can achieve our conservation goals and improve wildlife habitat and have the safest, most abundant food supply in the world, because we've done that. History has shown that. In the last 90 years of partnership with farmers and ranchers, we have created the most safest, most abundant food supply in the world, and at the same time, we've reduced erosion and we've improved habitat. We're proud of that. All of Kansas farmers and ranchers should be proud of helping accomplish that, and we need to go forward believing that these objectives are not exclusive. We can achieve all of them when we work together, we collaborate, and we're smart.
Sounds like the Farm Service Agency is there to help those farmers and those agriculture producers make that happen. There are many programs available, as Dennis McKinney went over, who is the Farm Service Agency State Director for Kansas. If you're interested in finding out more about these programs, feel free to get into contact with your Farm Service Agency office in your county. Thank you, Dennis, for taking the time to come in and talk about kind of what the government is doing for farmers.
Well, thanks to Farm Bureau for having me come in. I appreciate the opportunity.
That was Farm Service Agency State Director for Kansas, Dennis McKinney, who is also a Farm Bureau member in Kansas in Comanche County. If you are interested in learning more about these multiple programs or different things that FSA is doing, go ahead and search for your county FSA office. And as Dennis mentioned, I'm sure they're more than happy to help you figure out things that you can do to help benefit your operation. I'm Shelby Varner, and this has been Inside Ag from Kansas Farm Bureau, the voice of agriculture.